His name means who is like God, or like Jehovah, rather. Do you have, how many of you have Jackson's Proper Name Dictionary? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. About all of you, I guess. Well, I don't need to give you the meanings of all of these names, but I'll touch on some of them perhaps as we go along. This is the word of the Lord that came to Micah, the Morasthite. You remember there was another prophet by the name of Micaiah, similar name, back in the days of Ahab. And he prophesied, and Ahab had him put in jail. This is in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Just offhand, could you tell me what other prophets prophesied during his time? Amos did, and who else? Pardon? Can't be entirely proven that Joel did. Isaiah did. Now, do you know who came on the scene first, Micah or Isaiah? What makes you think that? Yeah, well, I'll tell you how we... One good reason. I'll tell you how we know that he did. This man prophesied in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, and Isaiah prophesied in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. He picked up a dominion ahead of this man. And we're going to read about what he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Now, I'm sure you know that Samaria was the capital of the 10 tribes, and Jerusalem the capital of the southern kingdom. And this section begins in the second verse, "Hear, all ye people." And it covers especially the first two chapters. In the third chapter, this section begins with this, "And I said, Hear, I pray you, O ye heads of Jacob." And then this goes on to the sixth chapter, when again he said, "Hear ye now what the Lord saith." Then the last chapter is in part prayer and prophecy concerning the end time. It seems as though one of the most unpopular jobs in those days was to be a prophet. "Hearken all ye, or hear all ye people, hearken, O earth, and all that therein is, and let the Lord God be witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple." The song that way back, the song that the Lord taught Moses to sing, was to be a witness against the children of Israel, that it may stand as a witness against them, he said. So the Lord doesn't say, "Now I'm against you, I'm going to send you to hell." Mr. Moody had a church in Chicago, and when he was in Ireland, there was a young man told him, "I'm going to come to America pretty soon." He figured he was heading for a place to preach. He just said, "Well, come see us," and went on. And the young man finally came to America, and he came to Chicago, and Mr. Moody was leaving. He said to the elders, have him preach one night, and if he does all right, we can have him again. And when he came back, the young man had preached on John 3:16, and they let him keep preaching. And he just kept preaching on John 3:16. And he used every approach in the book to prove that God loved men. And Moody said it changed his whole ministry. He said he had always preached that God was a God of judgment. And Mr. Ironside told a story about he and another man were preaching at a place one time, and he heard a couple of men discussing him and his fellow minister, and they didn't know he was listening in. One of them said to the other one, "Have you noticed," called the other minister by name, "he tells you what you will get if you come to the Lord. And Mr. Ironside will tell you what you'll get if you don't come to the Lord." And he said it had an effect on his ministry. This young minister at Moody's preached from the fact that God raised the prophets up early. The scripture says sending them early because he loved them. And I would say you'd have to have a sanctified imagination to preach week after week on John 3:16, though there is enough there for any number of sermons. Every word in it could be built into a sermon. So God loved these people. In fact, the first time in the book of Deuteronomy that it is said in history that God loved anybody, it was this people. Let me turn back there to the sixth chapter, I believe, of the book of Deuteronomy. Give you a bad steer. Pardon? 7:8. "But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand." I believe back in the fourth chapter there is a statement too, the 37th verse. "Because he loved thy fathers." Now this is the first time in history. The race at this time was over 2,500 years old. And this is the first time in history that it was written. Now God loved men before this, and maybe he told them so, I don't know. This is the first time that it is recorded. "He loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them, and brought thee out in his sight with his mighty power out of Egypt. Now, later we're told that God loved the world. But he wanted to witness to facts. Jesus coming, he saved many people. But the 23rd chapter of the book of Matthew has seven or eight woes, pronounced seven of them against the scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites. The Lord cometh out of his place and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. And the mountains shall be molten under him, and the valleys shall be cleft as wax before the fire, and as the waters that are poured down a steep place, like a waterfall. He wants them to stand in awe of the Lord. The transgression of Jacob is all, this is going to happen because of the transgression of Jacob. For the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? That was the head of the northern kingdom, and it was a seat of idolatry. What are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? They set up idols. It is said of Manasseh, the king of Judah, that he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood from one end to the other. He built idols in the house of the Lord, and made Israel sin worse than the heathen that God cast out before them. I will make Samaria an heap of the field, and as plantings of a vineyard, and I will pour down the stones thereof into the valley, and I will discover the foundations. He was going to tear them out, clear down to the foundations. All the graven images thereof shall be beaten to pieces, and all the hires, that is, the income that had come in from them. I was reading, my son had a book out there, the picture of a great cathedral that was built in a town in France, built by the common people, and they ran out of money. The greatest cathedral, the biggest one in France, and they had the hands and the skull, presumably, of a dead saint. They put this on display for 5 years, and people paid enough to come and see it that they had money to finish their cathedral. As far as I'm concerned, that was the hires of idolatry. All the idols will I lay desolate, for she gathered into the hire of an harlot, and they shall return to the hire of an harlot. Therefore I will wail and howl, and I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the dragons, that is, like ostriches, the word means, and mourning, or no, the word owls means ostrich. They make a moaning sound, the ostrich, not the owls. And not exactly clear whether it was the prophet going to do this or whether the words were in the mouth of the Israelites, but we gather from the fact that the Lord showed Amos what he was going to do Israel, and he'd say, "Ah, Lord, Israel is small." And the Lord would say, "Well, I won't do that." Now notice the ninth verse. In the first chapter of the book of Romans, it says, God gave them up. God gave them up. God gave them over. Those statements. Three times. Twice he gave them up. Once he gave them over. And when God gives them up, there's no end. There's no restraint. Notice her wound is incurable. For it has come unto Judah. He has come unto the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. Sad when things become incurable. In the history of the professing church, God raised up a monk named Martin Luther. I got so tickled at a man a couple of weeks ago that he just got mad at me. I laughed and laughed. He's a Catholic, and he pointed at our church. He said, "You're a split of the Catholic Church," and that's what got me tickled. There was never a person in there that was in the Catholic Church, and we're an independent group, so we couldn't have split off of it. But anyway, the time came when that thing had sunk so low. If you ever read a history of the Reformation, it was awful. When the Pope sent people to silence Luther, one of his emissaries reported back to him, "The fool doesn't love gold. You can't hire him." And one of the things that stirred Luther up was that they were raising money by selling indulgences. As soon as the money sounded in the till, he said, the people were released from purgatory. And some of these things stirred him up greatly, and he tacked his thesis to the door. And this was the beginning of the break. And you can still see it in Germany. I picked up a tract in English in a Catholic cathedral, and it spoke of a certain building being given to that cult called the Lutherans. But the Catholic Church over there is still the Catholic Church. We see it at its best over here, if there be such a thing. But over there is still the Catholic Church. Now he said, "Don't declare this at Gath. Weep ye not all in the house of Aphra. Roll thyself in the dust." In other words, they would just be glad of this judgment that was coming on Israel. The word Aphra means dust. Gath means a winepress. "Pass ye away thou inhabitants of Sepher, meaning fair, having thy shame naked, the inhabitants of Zaanan, meaning their flock, came not forth in the morning. Bethazel, meaning house of bitterness, he shall receive of you his standing. Evidently they were going to come to a stand there in the evasion. For the inhabitants of Meroth, no, this word means bitterness, waiteth carefully for good, but evil came down from the Lord unto the gate of Jerusalem. Notice this came down from the Lord. Now, perhaps there are chances, the scripture says, time and chance happens to all. Still, there are things that come definitely from the Lord. For example, the Lord killed two of Judah's sons. Two of Aaron's sons offered strange fire before the Lord, and the Lord killed them. Uzziah offered incense before the Lord against the law for him to do so. The Lord smote him with leprosy. 250 princes offered incense to the Lord in the 16th of Numbers. Fire from the Lord came out and killed every one of them, encouraging the people to escape. The 13th verse, bind the chariot to the swift beast. This is Lachish. She is the beginning of sin to the daughter of Zion. Probably they were not too far from the border between the two countries. Probably idolatry leaked over into there first, for the transgressions of Israel were found there. Israel's transgressions were primarily the calves that Jeroboam set up. Therefore shalt thou give presents to Moresheth Gath, that is for help. The houses of Achzib shall be a lie to the king of Israel. Yet I will bring an heir unto thee, O inhabitant of Meresha. The heir was to be the heathen. They were going to come in fullness as the eagle, for they are going into captivity from thee. You remember this awful statement in the Psalms about Babylon? Happy shall he be that taketh thy little ones and dasheth them against a stone. I believe it was Geronimo. He became a Christian in his later years. I read his testimony. He said when he led the Indians, they'd capture a white village, and he said that they'd take white children and toss them up in the air, and said they'd just gurgle, in, you know, like a child will when he's glad, and toss him up in the air and then let him come down on their dagger. You might say, well, hell wouldn't be hot enough for him, but strange enough, God saved the man. Guess it shouldn't be strange, but I told you about David, not David Livingston, but the great Indian missionary in this country. Can't call his name right now, but he told of a savage Indian that killed a very fine young man, and he wanted God to kill him. And then, as the way it turned out, he got saved. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it because it is in the power of their hand. Notice the second verse, they covet fields and take them by violence. You remember what Ahab did in the 21st chapter of Kings? How he wanted the vineyard of this godly Israelite. He wouldn't let him have it. Jezebel said, I'll give it to you. So she had this poor man stoned to death, gave it to Ahab. Elijah met him there and said, in the place where the dogs licked the blood of this man, I suddenly can't call his name, they'll lick your blood. And they did. So they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. People are continually beaten out of things. I knew a family that they were very common, ordinary people, but they had enough Indian blood that they had gotten farms in Oklahoma, and they had been done out of them completely. And this is sad. Oppression is such a bad thing. There was a man in our country that was wealthy, had three good farms, and somebody told me when he was young, he was traveling with a young man, and supposedly they were robbed, and the young man lost his money. They figured this man got it, and that was the basis of his wealth. Oppression, injustice, all the time. Takeovers in countries, in communities, many stories of oppression. In his book, Father Shinnecke wrote a book, 50 Years in the Church of Rome. One of the things that turned him against the church was seeing a priest come and take over a woman's cow that had a bunch of little children. Her father had died, or the husband had died, and he took their cow away from them because of a small debt. And the Lord hates oppression. People oppress others to make them rich. There was a farmer in our community that would get somebody to farm for him. When I was a kid, every farmer had a tenant house, and he would get a man to farm for him. And somebody told me he'll seemingly be good to them, then he'll beat them out of everything they have. And I read of people that would get the Mexicans that had come to this country. They'd work for them to work in their crops. They were here illegally, but I won't pay you until gather the crop. But just before he gathered the crop, he would turn them in for being in this country as illegals, and then he wouldn't pay them. They wouldn't get anything. The Lord said, therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, against this family do I devise an evil. Not evil in the sense of moral evil, but a judgment from which ye shall not remove your necks like a yoke on the neck. Did you ever see oxen under the yoke? I've ridden many miles behind ox teams, not in this country, but elsewhere. Neither shall ye go haughtily, for this time is evil. Haughtily. We read earlier of Edom's pride back in the book of Obadiah. In that day shall one take up a parable against you and lament with a doleful lamentation. Here's the way the Hebrew reads, lament with a lamentation of lamentations. Last word is plural. But here will be the lamentation, we be utterly spoiled. He hath changed the portion of my people. How hath he removed it from me? Turning away, he hath divided our fields. Earlier we read of the children that were going to captivity, and you and I can't quite imagine. Now, on the news tonight, I was out at the home of my son, and he had news on. It showed mothers and fathers in their grief because of the loss of their children, their sons dying in Lebanon. And we can't quite imagine what it was like here in slavery days and what it was like, especially back there, when a country was subdued, the people were slaves. When Jerusalem was captured by Titus the Roman, the world market was glutted with slaves, and the Lord had predicted that the time would come when they wouldn't be bought and no man would buy them. Nobody wanted any more slaves. After all, a slave is a liability. If you can't use him, you have to feed him. And that was the way it went. Therefore, thou shalt have none that shall cast a cord by lot in the congregation of the Lord. That is, you won't have any inheritance. The cord here is a measuring cord. Prophesy ye not, say they, to them that prophesy. They shall not prophesy to them, that they shall not take shame. O thou that art named the house of Jacob, is the Spirit of the Lord straitened? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him that walketh uprightly? Notice this. Even of late, my people is risen up as an enemy, even risen up against God. And I spoke Sunday morning concerning different ones, but Korah, who rebelled against Moses, and Absalom, who rebelled against David, and now here is a case of people rising up against the Lord. Notice what they do. You pull off the robe with the garment from them that pass by securely as men averse to war. Travelers traveling across the country, catching him, jerking his garments off of him just because he was unprotected. I've heard of these things happening in this country in its early days. The women of my people have you cast out of their pleasant houses. From their children have you taken away my glory forever. That is, sex nor age meant nothing to them. You remember the woman in the back in the book of Kings in the time of Elisha, that she came and asked for help, and she said, my husband has died. And she said, the creditor has come to take away my two sons. Now, wouldn't that be tragic? But that was the life. You remember what Elisha did. He, under God, he performed a miracle for her. Well, he told them that they'd better depart. They were going to leave. This country was going to be destroyed. And he said, if a man walking in the Spirit, this would be a false spirit, and falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and a strong drink, he shall even be the prophet of this people. I will assemble Jacob, all of thee, I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together. Now he speaks of the future. As the sheep of Bozrah, as the flock in the midst of their fold, they shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker. I feel that the breaker here is a picture of Christ. He's come up before them. That is, if anything opposes them, he'll open the way. This is the remnant of the end time. They have broken up and have passed through the gate, and are gone out by it, and their king shall pass before them, and the Lord on the head of them. I'm glad for these little rays of sunlight through the prophecy. Otherwise, many times it's just a dismal record of judgments that are come. Again now he calls them to hear, I pray you, O heads of Jacob. This is addressed to the leaders of the land. You princes of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know judgment? You're supposed to be able to do justice. That's your place. Who hate the good and love the evil. Notice it's reversed. It should be the other way around. You may remember in John Munyon's Pilgrim's Progress, when one of the ones that was with the pilgrim was on trial. One of the jurymen's name was Lord Hategood and Lord Carnality. These were the names of the jurymen and so on down the line. Notice, who pluck off their skin from off them and their flesh from off their bones, who also eat the flesh of my people, but flay their skin from off them and break their bones and chop them in pieces as for the pot, like you would a chicken or a bird, as flesh within the cauldron. A man complained to his king one time that, this was back in England, that he wasn't being paid properly by the people. And the king replied, "It's given to every shepherd to share his flock, but not to skin them." I thought it was a good answer coming from the secular power to the religious. Whatever the religious power, now I read this statement today. Ironside had this in one of his books. He said that Pope Leo made the statement, hasn't this fictitious story of Jesus Christ been a profitable thing for us? And so this is religion. We'll have a little more about this later that's comical in a way. Then shall they cry unto the Lord, but he will not hear them. He will even hide his face from them at that time, as they have behaved themselves ill in their doings. Similar to the first chapter of Proverbs, as they called, and I called, and they wouldn't hear, so they'll call, and I won't hear. Thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that make my people err. Notice now, this is a little bit obscure. They bite with their teeth and cry peace, and he that putteth not into their mouths, they even prepare war against him. I think the thought is this. They bite, that is, as long as you feed them, they preach peace. But if you don't feed them, then they'll prophesy there's going to be a war. And isn't that humanity for you? Therefore night shall be unto you. Now this is a dismal picture, that ye shall not have a vision, and it shall be dark unto you, that ye shall not divine, and the sun shall go down over the prophets, and they shall be dark over them. Then shall the seers be ashamed, and the diviners confounded. Yea, they shall not cover their, shall cover their lips, afraid to open their mouths, for there is no answer of God. Have you ever heard false prophecies given forth? I have. I was asked to pray over a baby one time in a dedicatory service, and a woman jumped up and started to prophesy, and I said to myself, if that woman's saying the truth, that man will be a greater prophet than John the Baptist. And this was kind of comical. In Oklahoma City, a woman got up one time to give a prophecy, and she said, "Thus saith the Lord that delivered Noah out of the belly of the whale." And the pastor got up and said, "Sister, you'd better sit down. Noah was never in the belly of a whale." Well, here's what the Micah says. "But truly I am full of the power by the Spirit of the Lord. Zechariah said, not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord." And I'll tell you that in Christian service, what the Spirit of the Lord doesn't do, it just won't be done. Do you realize that a man anointed with the Spirit of God was a greater preacher than an angel could be, because an angel isn't anointed with the Holy Spirit? He hasn't been born again. He didn't need to be. He doesn't know what it is to have sins forgiven. And the Holy Spirit will work with the minister that declares the word. And this prophet said he was full of power to declare unto Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin. And he's still addressing the heads. "Hear this, I pray you, heads of the house of Jacob and princes, that abhor judgment and pervert all equity. They build up Zion with blood and Jerusalem with iniquity." They don't care what they do. "The heads thereof judge for reward, the priests thereof teach for hire, the prophets thereof divine for money. Yet will they lean upon the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? None evil can come upon us." Great people, weren't they? I'm going to read Jeremiah 6:13. Along this line, "For from the least of them, even unto the greatest of them, every one is given to covetousness, and from the prophet, even unto the priest, every one dealeth falsely." This Father Shinneke that I spoke of a moment ago was a priest in Canada, and he states that there was one time in Canada when he and two other priests were the only ones in the whole country of the priests that were not heavy drinkers. Well, that is the ministry. Well, I just say, poor people. "Therefore shall Zion, for your sake, be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountains of the house of the Lord as the high places of the forest." Will you turn with me for just a moment to Jeremiah 26? Now, some people took Jeremiah and they wanted to kill him. And there were others that didn't want to kill him. And In the 14th verse, he said to them, "As for me, behold, I am in your hand. Do with me as seemeth good and meet unto you. But know ye for certain that if you put me to death, ye shall surely bring innocent blood upon yourselves and upon this city and upon the inhabitants thereof. For of truth the Lord has sent me unto you to speak all these words in your ears." Then said the princes and all the people unto the priests and to the prophets, "This man is not worthy to die." And notice who wanted to kill him. "For he has spoken to us in the name of the Lord our God." Then rose up certain of the elders of the land and spake to all the assembly of the people, saying, "Now notice, Micah the Morasthite prophesied in the days of Hezekiah king of Judah, and spake to all the people of Judah, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Zion shall be plowed like a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountains of the house as high places of the forest. Did Hezekiah king of Judah and all Judah put him at all to death? Did he not fear the Lord and besought the Lord, and the Lord repented him of the evil which he had pronounced against them? Thus might we produce great evil against our souls." I just wanted you to see that Jeremiah's prophecy quotes this verse. And I might tell you that when the Romans conquered Jerusalem in 71 AD, they left a man in charge of it, and he took a plowshare and plowed and drug it around over to just let them know this city is through. And for many years it was through. But here is what he said. I'll read it again. "Therefore shall Zion for your sake be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountain of the house as high places of the forest." So much for his prophecy and Jeremiah's writing it down. Now in the 4th chapter, will somebody turn to Isaiah 2 and just hold it? I'll have you read it in just a moment. Let's read from Micah 4. "But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains." Notice the last days. This expression occurs first in the 49th chapter of the book of Genesis, when Jacob prophesied to his sons and said he would tell them what would come to pass in the last days. "But anyway, this mountain or this house shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. Many nations shall come and say, Come, and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among many people, and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Now read Isaiah 2, beginning at the first verse, if you will. Now you could stop and puzzle. Who quoted who? Wouldn't you rather believe that for a testimony God inspired each man to write it? It is interesting that you will notice that Isaiah never mentions these other prophets, and they don't mention him. They went in their ways, and they just didn't mention each other at all. Now, according to the dates that are given for this, Isaiah's prophecy was recorded in 760. According to the date that is given here, Micah recorded this in 710. So if it was a quotation, he quoted Isaiah if the chronology is correct. But anyway, it is a testimony about what's going to be in the last days. Now, this will be Israel in the millennial age. Now, in the Bible, there are last days concerning Israel and last days concerning the church, and there is a difference in them. "The mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it." At your leisure, for your own education, I'm sure you have read it, but take Ezekiel sometime, begin at the 40th verse, and read through the rest of the book, and you will find about the great millennial temple. You will find in reading it that they won't have gold and silver there. And you will find many things there if you're observant. I wrote down quite a few things that would be there at that time. I'll just read a few of them. I won't take time to prove the statements. You can prove it yourself. What feast? The Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Tabernacles. And what sacrifices? The burnt offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, the meat offering, the peace offering. The Sabbath will be kept. The Jubilee will be restored. And no metal is mentioned in connection with the tabernacle or with the new temple. There is a man whose appearance is like that of brass back in the 40th chapter, but still in connection with this temple, no metal, the temple, no veil, no ark, no Urim, no Thummim, no high priest are mentioned, no blue, purple, or white, neither incense. Much oil is mentioned, and the most holy place is mentioned, the most holy thing. The whole area is most holy. The cherubim have only two faces, and the only stone is that in the hewn tables, and not too much linen mentioned. But it will be entirely different than what has gone before, but that's another subject, and we can't get into that. But here it will be recognized by all people. If you read the 14th chapter of the book of Zechariah, it will be the law that nations go up there to worship. Now, I suppose in their representatives, because Palestine wouldn't be large enough to contain all the nations, would it? Of course, I will say that in the beginning of the millennial age, they're going to be very small, and some of them won't be. They will perish. Many nations shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. It will be a rule of grace, but it will be an absolute rule. I'll just call your attention to this in Zechariah 14 for just a moment. The 16th verse says, it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. But what if they don't go? It shall be that whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth and unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. That'll be quite an argument, won't it? They might not go this year, but they'll go next. You know, the Lord does interesting things. There, you take the two witnesses. Well, they will evidently have prominent places because they're able to smite any place that they want to with all plagues as often as they will. And you can imagine what it would be like. A delegation comes and says, you're going to do it my way. And the fellow says, hey, when you go home, everybody in your town is going to have cancer. He goes home, finds everybody has cancer. They can smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. They'll have quite an argument. And this is quite an argument. Let's say, just for example, suppose Missouri says, well, that's a long ways over there. We are not going to send a delegation this year. Well, it's already settled. Next year they won't have any rain, and we learn something what that's like this year. Just a little thought in passing. He shall judge among many people and rebuke strong nations. You over there, straighten it up. Clear things out. You remember what Pharaoh said when Moses said, the Lord sent Moses, Israel is my son, my firstborn, let him go or I'll slay your firstborn. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord? I know not the Lord, neither will let Israel go. In one of my Bibles I wrote right up there, that's what you think. He did let Israel go after a while. And out in Colorado they have an Air Academy where choice young men are selected across the nation by congressmen or representatives, and they go there for so many years, and then they give so many years to the military. We have the Naval Academy over in the East Coast, what do they call it? And over here at Leavenworth, we have General Eisenhower was trained over there some. Well, listen to this. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. War is the study of war is a very great strategy. I was looking through a book the other day, and there was a picture of old Bull Halsey. That probably doesn't ring a bell, but it would with Arthur Eggers, a very prominent man in the Navy, in the naval battles of the war just past. He had learned his lessons well, and I rented an apartment from a Marine captain, and during the war, here came a Japanese Navy steaming along, and he said they did the ideal thing in a naval warfare. They crossed our T. We had a string of ships like this, and they crossed in front of it. And I think our Navy sank 60 ships. Well, at that time, it'll be, well, just suppose we would flatly run out of coal and oil, and that could happen. And what would be the use of making another gasoline war? Just to be out the window, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be any use at all. Well, what's the use of learning to fight if you're never going to fight again? Now, when that last gruesome time comes, when Satan is released and gathers a great company together to come and encompass the saints about, there's no fight. Fire comes down from heaven and devours them. They shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts hath spoken it. I went to see some people last spring, I think it was, and they lived out in the edge of the country. I had gone to take them a life story. They wanted to like Brother Copley's life story, and I went out there, and they weren't home, and I knocked on the door, and there's nobody home. I rang the doorbell, and I turned the knob, and the door was open. I just took the book in and left it, and I came to Brother Eggers tonight, and the door, back door was locked, and I went to his front door, and there was nobody up there, and I tied the door, and it was open, so I came on downstairs. Well, in that day, there will be nobody to make them afraid. Now, in Solomon's time, in 1 Kings 4, it is stated, the 25th verse, Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba. They didn't have to lock their doors. And Zechariah 3:10 has a little thought on this. You might glance there for a moment. These are millennial forecasts. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, shall ye call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree. Can you think of anybody in the New Testament that was under a fig tree? Yes, before Philip called thee, I saw thee when you were under the fig tree. And this is a figure of speech. It's like the apple of the second chapter of the Song of Solomon. It is said that that tree that is meant there doesn't shed its leaves, and it's a continual blossoming and bearing of fruit. It's like coconuts. I've seen grown coconuts on a tree and little bitty ones that big around, just coming on. And so it's a picture of a continuous blessing of the Lord. All people will walk, everyone in the name of his God, that is, though all people would be a better translation, perhaps, will walk everyone in the name of his God. We will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. In that day, saith the Lord, will I assemble her that halteth, and I will gather her that is driven out, and her that I have afflicted. This is Israel, to be brought back. Now, not like they are today. Israel is in their land. That is, there is a group of them there. Not near all of them. But they are there in unbelief, and whether we like it or not, Israel is anti-Christian. A Jew said to me one time, I just think of what you call the New Testament as being anti-Jewish, another anti-Jewish book. Well, they are anti-Christian. The Lord will change this someday. There will be the ministry of the two witnesses, and I don't think they will be the only testimony. And then eventually there will be that great personality coming at the head of a great army coming from heaven. There will come the time when all kindreds will wail because of him. And according to Zechariah, there will be a great mourning in Israel. I will make her that halted a remnant, and her that was cast off a strong nation. The Lord shall reign over them in Mount Zion from henceforth, even forever. The Jehovah here, word translated Lord is Jehovah, will be our Lord Jesus Christ. And thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion, the kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. Now why dost thou cry out aloud? Is there no king? He goes back now. Is there no king in thee? Is thy counselor perished? For pangs have taken thee as a woman in travail. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail, for now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt go even to Babylon. There shalt thou be delivered. There the Lord shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies. Then again, looking to the future, now also many nations are gathered against thee that say, let her be defiled, and let her eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of the Lord. Remember, the psalmist speaks of the Lord's thoughts toward him, that they were good thoughts, that they couldn't be numbered. Neither understand they his counsel, for he shall gather them as the sheaves into the floor. That is, the threshing fleeth, the sheaves to be threshed. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thine horn iron. I will make thy hoofs brass, like an animal threshing the wheat. You've probably never seen an ox threshing wheat. I have. I will make thy hoofs brass, Thou shalt beat in pieces many people, and I will consecrate their grain unto the Lord, and their substance unto the Lord of the whole earth. The fifth chapter gives us that beautiful prophecy concerning the birth of Christ. But we'll have to leave that as of now. I don't want to get into the chapter, but it's unfortunately many of these things have been brought down to where people's concept. Sister Bodie used to tell about a fellow that came to church, and he was, you know, there are different degrees of mental lameness. There is the slow, there's the moron, down to an imbecile. This man, physically speaking, was grown. He was like the town that Paul Harvey told about, or the man in the town. Man had set three fires. He could get violent. People had moved away to get away from him. But you couldn't put him in jail. He was a grown man, but he had the mind of an eight-year-old. Sister Bodie said this man would testify about dear little baby Jesus. Now, in his concept, that was what Jesus was. Well, so many people never hear anything much but this fifth chapter about the birth of Christ in Bethlehem. And they know that story. Thank God if they know that much. It doesn't take much to save a man, but it's good if they can hear the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey says sometimes. All right.